back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively through the bye week now, and there's real football happening this week. Feels like a quick bye week. The Carolina Panthers are coming to Baltimore. Luke Jones will be out in Owings Mills all week long, getting ready for the usual. I found it interesting over the weekend that, you know, the Bills had everybody believing Case Keenum was going to play. I don't know where the honor amongst these lacking integrity people have to fudge injury reports when people are betting billions of dollars on it in the NFL every week. But certainly the injury report this week will be particularly interesting from the Ravens side in regard to skill position players, who can make it back. And, you know, we won't know until Sunday because John Harbaugh will lie to us all week because that's what he does. But that's what they all do at this point, right?
Yeah. And I mean, I understand it to a point. I mean, I think, you know, there's certainly situations where it's questionable. And I think in the case of Josh Allen, he had an injury to his UCL. Like he has an elbow injury. Now, did it look like it impacted him a whole lot in terms of physically throwing the football on Sunday? No, but it is something that's real and it's something to be concerned about. I think that's going to be an interesting subplot for the Bills the rest of the way, you know, in terms of it's not just playing in week 10, it's what does it look like in week 14? How's it feeling week 18? So, you know, for a team that, you know, was widely regarded as the Super Bowl favorite, at least until Sunday, at least until
well, if Lamar had a banged up elbow, we'd feel differently about the Ravens' chances right now.
No question. No question. So, I mean, that's why, I mean, this game is, we can compare teams and look at schedules and figure out who's going to be where come Thanksgiving and Christmas and New Year's Day and into January now, but you just don't know. It's a game of attrition, as we saw with the Ravens last year. I mean, last year at this time, you're feeling pretty good about the Ravens. And then, well, they lose Marlon Humphrey in the first week in December. They lose Lamar second week of December. Season over. Boom. Done. I mean, that's how quickly it can happen. So, in the case of the Ravens coming out of the bye week, I mean, you're hoping that Mark Andrews is back against Carolina. He's probably of their guys that are still kind of in that group, not counting Marcus Williams, who's not going to be back until December, for example. But in the case of Andrews, you know, I think there's probably still a little bit of question this week, you know, because he had the shoulder and the knee. Gus Edwards, John Harbaugh already said last week during the bye that he'll be ready to go. I mean, that was a slight hamstring issue. They were smart to be cautious and to be careful with him against New Orleans, but he's going to be fine. David Ajabo, I expect him to make his debut against Carolina. We'll see how much he plays. We'll see what he looks like. Keep in mind, this is a kid who was a raw prospect and then did not have an entire spring and summer of practice. So I think expectations, I think, excitement is certainly in order, but I think being realistic about it, let's not expect this kid to look like the defensive rookie of the year overnight. You know, I think he's going to need some time to get acclimated, but can still contribute and still be part of that pass rushing rotation. But, you know, you look at that, you know, this team by and large is pretty, you know, relative to where it's been even earlier this year, or certainly going back to last year, they're in a pretty good place health-wise. I mean, yeah, they've suffered some injuries, and you know, Michael Pierce isn't coming back, for example. But
well, I look around the rest of the league and everybody injured over the weekend and thinking, well, you know, the Ravens smell more like a championship team in November because of their health, and they're not even all that healthy. To your point, we're still watching the injury report this week, but between the schedule, the fact that Lamar is upright, the fact that Roquan Smith is in, the fact that Ronnie Stanley is playing, you know, I think the Ravens could win the Super Bowl. I mean, I wouldn't bet against them at this point.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd bet against them in the sense of if you're going to ask me Ravens versus the field or are the Ravens the favorite in the AFC, I'm going to lean towards Kansas City at this point because of what we said in our previous conversation. Patrick Mahomes, he's done it, and he's the best and most consistent of this current era, not talking about Brady and Rodgers in the twilight of their careers. But that said, they're right there, and I'm not going to sit here and say they can't do it. I think they're right there. And, you know, I'm still going to talk about wide receiver in the passing game. I do think the passing game needs to be better. Not necessarily against Carolina on Sunday, you know, as I saw the Ravens opened up as a 13-point favorite, which sounds about right. If you watch the Panthers play this year, and they've already fired their coach, and PJ Walker's going to be their quarterback, who, you know, had one good game against Atlanta a few weeks back, but has played a lot of ugly football otherwise. And know, like Carolina runs the ball. If the Ravens can stop the run, you know, it's probably going to be a long day for the Panthers. So, you know, it really comes down to that. But, you know, the passing game. And then on the defensive side, as much as things look really good across the board, you know, certainly Roquan Smith adds a different element that we talked about a lot in the aftermath of the win over the Saints. But I do look at the cornerback position and say, you know, in an ideal world, you'd have another corner that you feel really good about, in the sense that, go back to 2019, it wasn't just Marlon Humphrey and Marcus Peters. You still, you know, you had Jimmy Smith as your number three. You had Brandon Carr, who at that point had transitioned to a safety spot, but could still play corner if you needed him there. You know, I think the Ravens at number three corner spot, which interestingly enough, has kind of evolved into Kyle Hamilton playing more big nickel. So, well, whether that continues, whether a Damarian Williams or a Brandon Stevens or maybe a Jalen Armour Davis, who finally got back on the game day active list in New Orleans after being a healthy scratch for weeks. You know, if one of those guys can emerge by season's end, I think that would be really nice, because, you know, it's not just about Marlon Humphrey and Marcus Peters. You know, you play nickel most of the time, at least nickel, if not dime, in today's day and age. So
Nickel
you
is
need depth
base,
there.
right? Literally.
Yeah, exactly. It really is. I mean, the base defense, the Ravens aren't in it a whole lot, you know, as funny as that sounds. And that's everyone. I mean, that's
Well, I mean, that
most
would be
teams
a
around the
case
league.
for, do we need three linebackers, and what is a rush edge? Is it 3-4, 4-3 up front?
Sure.
Either way, it's five on the back.
Yeah, right. I mean, and they use different players. As I mentioned, Kyle Hamilton's, you know, playing much more the last couple games, and he's kind of become that de facto, you know, that default nickel, you know, even though he's a safety and not a corner. So will that work out? You know, I'm guessing it'll work fine against Carolina or Jacksonville or teams like that. But that's where I get into, again, how many times this team's going to be tested between now and at what I expect is them to win the division and be playing in January. So, you know, that is one area that, you know, I do have a little bit of concern. You know, I in an ideal world, and obviously you're not going to be able to make two or three deals at the trade deadline. You know, that's just not how it works. But, you know, it would have been nice to add another corner, you know, and it kind of speaks to losing Kyle Fuller back in week one, how much that hurt them in terms of, on paper, he was their number three corner and, you know, could play outside, can play inside. You know, it allows you to be more flexible with Marlon Humphrey, moving him around. So, but, you know, all these teams, you know, you mentioned it. I mean, injuries are, it's part of the deal. You know, it's very rare when you find a team, frankly, as healthy as what Cincinnati was last year, as healthy as the Rams stayed last year. You know, and everyone talks about, you know, Les Snead and trading away their picks, and they were all in, and all these superstars and a top-heavy roster, and how cap poor they were going to be in the moving forward. They were able to make that Super Bowl run because they stayed really healthy. And
And
hey,
you look at what happened to Cooper Kupp on Sunday, and you see
sure.
how quickly. By the way, I want to throw this out to you because we talked at length about the rest of the schedule and other teams. And we're kind of bullish on the Ravens winning a lot of games, right? Because they're playing these terrible teams. I had to look at the Chiefs' schedule and say, can they catch them? Could the Ravens be a one seed, get a bye? Could they be that team? Because we haven't, they were 3-3 a couple weeks ago. We weren't talking about that, right? The Bills were unstoppable. We weren't talking about that, right? Chargers, Rams, Bengals, Broncos, Texans, Seahawks, Broncos, Raiders. The Chiefs will be favored in every game. The Ravens are 12.5 point favorite home this week against Carolina. You mentioned how bad their quarterback is. But the Chiefs are going to win a lot of games too. You know, so I think the notion of the one seed at home at the playoffs and bye week, you mentioned week 18 and playing the Bengals at the end as to whether starters would play or where the Ravens would be or where the Bengals would be. I think the Chiefs are going to be filing their nails awaiting January because they have an easy schedule as well, something we haven't talked about.
Yeah, I mean, and certainly that's going to be a part of it. I mean, we've talked about it a lot in terms of what kind of path Cincinnati has, but yeah, that's part of it. I mean, that's just the reality of it. I mean, the Ravens had a really tough schedule early on. It's why even when they were 3-3, we were kind of saying, okay, yeah, there are things to be concerned about, and it's unacceptable to keep blowing second half leads. But if you can navigate the next few weeks, get yourself to the bye week at 6-3, get a chance to rest up, get yourself a little healthier. Yeah, you looked at the second half of the schedule and say, hey, it's going to be sitting right there to make a run. Whether that means, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean number one in the AFC, But it certainly makes you feel better about winning the division and making the playoffs, which, hey, at 3-3, that wasn't a given by any stretch of the imagination, you know? So a three-game winning streak.
I have to smile because we began the whole thing against the AFC East like we were back in the old Colts era in the 70s. Yeah. We're playing all these teams. Like New England, they stink. The Jets, they always stink. The Dolphins, they've stunk from the beginning of time. Now, all of a sudden, that's the best division in the league, right? I mean, across the board, you've made a case that the Patriots can make the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, they can. They absolutely can. I mean, it doesn't mean I'm a big believer in Mac Jones or, you know, if they go back to Bailey Zappi or whatever his name was at some point. But, you know, you mentioned Kansas City. As much as we're talking about the Bills having lost two in a row and Josh Allen looking very mortal at best the last couple of weeks, you know, with some just bad red zone interceptions, look at the Bills schedule the rest of the way. Home against Cleveland, at Detroit, at New England. Okay. At the Patriots division game, just like we talked about the Ravens going to Cleveland, going to Pittsburgh, it's not a given. It's not a layup. Home against the Jets, home against Miami, at Chicago, at Cincinnati. So, and then they finish up with home against New England. You know, they're going to be favored in all those games. I mean, even Miami, they're playing at home, right? I mean, they're going to be favored. So it's not as though the Bills have a tough gauntlet of a schedule either. So the point is, the fact that we're talking about the Ravens being in this conversation is a credit to having won the last three games, being 6-3, the fact that they are healthier than they were last year, healthier than they were earlier in the season. And, you know, I mean, in the case of Buffalo stubbed their toe the last couple of weeks and lost a couple games. You know, you're going to have to win and win a lot. I mean, let's face it, when the Ravens were the number one seed in 2019, they were 2-2 at one point. Right. And then they won 14, or, you know, they not 14, they won 12 in a row. So, I mean, it's tough. There's one bye, there's one number one seed, you know, but one team gets home field advantage. So the fact that the Ravens can be in that conversation is a credit to them. But it's also a reminder of how difficult it is, because even with that schedule in that context, not necessarily talking about the AFC North, but the number one seed, yeah, you're not going to have much margin for error because of what you said, Kansas City does not have a bear of a schedule. Buffalo does not have a bear of a schedule. So it's going to be which of these teams can get on a roll and just stay on a roll. And it might be a couple of them. You know, it might be a case. The Ravens could all but win out. You know, maybe they lose one game the rest of the way, and, you know, they still might be just short of, you know, the number one seed. I mean, that's just how it works. So, you know, go out and win every week and take care of business and don't look too far ahead, and, you know, we'll see where the chips fall at that point. But certainly you look at this thing and, you know, I mean, I think Miami was probably still, you know, we went around the league and we only mentioned the Dolphins in passing. I mean, yeah, their offense looks really darn good, especially if they could start running the football the way that they were.
I don't
able
think
to
that's a
Sunday.
Good game for the Ravens to have to go down to Miami and play in January.
Not sure.
Despite the weather, I don't think that's a good game for them.
I'm not sure that's a good game for anyone. I mean, I just think you look at that firepower and look, I don't think the Dolphins are winning the Super Bowl, but if you're asking me, can the Dolphins beat Kansas City or Buffalo or the Ravens? Yeah, of course they can. I mean, they've already beat the Ravens. They've already beaten Buffalo, even though, you know, it was kind of a weird game early in the season. But yeah, I mean, you've got some there's I mean, the firepower there is unbelievable. And say what you want about Tua, but he's playing at he's playing at a level that he's right there in the MVP race. And I mean, statistically, you look at his passer rating, you look at the touchdown passes, you look at the yards per attempt. And I get it. He has Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, but what do you want him to do at the end of the day? Apologize for that? You know, they've surrounded him with really special talent.
Get him the balls, which you do, right?
It really, for the Dolphins, it's going to come down to them stopping people and, you know, just scoring and scoring and scoring and get a couple stops. If they can get a couple stops over the course of a game, they're going to be really tough to beat. So,
well, that's a Kansas City thing. They're scoring 30 a week every week, right?
Yeah. I mean, Kansas City was funny on Sunday because what? They ended up beating the Jaguars by 10. And I remember you and I talked about this 2 years ago. It was before their Super Bowl against Tampa Bay. We talked about this with Aaron Schatz from Football Outsiders, how the Chiefs, they get bored in the middle of the game. Like they always do this thing where they jump out to a lead and then they'll let the other team hang around. They'll score a touchdown. I mean, whether you want to call it garbage time or not, I mean, there've been times where they've had to, you know, kind of rev the engine back up because it wasn't necessarily garbage time just yet. But, you know, that was another example of that. If you watch them against Jacksonville, Never thought the Jaguars were going to win the game, but they hung around enough to make it, I guess, a little bit interesting. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, you've got some really good teams in this conference. There's no question about it. Again, go back to your original question when we started breaking down Week 10. Who's great? You know, I think that's still TBD, and as it should be when you're going into Week 11. But certainly teams that have a lot going for them. And I'd say this much, you know, you get beyond those four. I mean, we've talked about it. Cincinnati, I mean, they're just going to have to play great football because their schedule's not going to give them too many breaks. But you look at those teams, and it really is a case of, you know, who can not just get on a roll, because all these teams have been on a roll to some degree, you know, except Buffalo the last 2 weeks, but who can stay on a roll? You know, who can stack enough wins to be in position to be that number one seed? And I think the Ravens have a shot at it, but it's certainly not going to be easy. And, you know, they're not going to have much margin for error. The good news is, yeah, the schedule, it's not impossible to look at the schedule and see the Ravens being able to reel off, seven, eight, you know, wins in a row, something along those lines. So, you know, it's just a matter of you have to go out and do it, and keeping your fingers crossed the entire way that Lamar Jackson stays healthy, in the same way that Kansas City's talking in those terms about Mahomes. And Buffalo right now, there are people saying prayers about, saying prayers for Josh Allen's elbow. And in the case of Miami, it's some kind of dream that they're having right now, that the Dolphins are as relevant as they've been in a long, long time. Just a matter of them continuing it. So it's gonna be fun. I mean, this is really shaping up to be, you know, even if the Ravens aren't necessarily gonna have these great weekly matchups against, you know, really tough teams per se, it's gonna be fun to watch this conference, because you've got some teams that are playing at a really high level right now.
Luke Jones is here. He will be there in Owings Mills because they allow him to go, but not me. But he'll be out there all week long, checking in with Coach Harbaugh and the injury reports and Roquan Smith and this bye week and him getting more acclimated. Clearly, he's a great football player. They put him into this situation. I saw where McCafferty was learning, you know, the playbook in San Francisco. I would think for Roquan Smith, things will slow down a little bit. I think there's a relationship with him and Queen to some degree that will be interesting in the middle of the defense. Now you bring Ojabo into that. I don't want to say they have an abundance of riches on defense at this point, but between JPP coming into this mix, the fact that Houston signed on and has been unbelievable, quietly sort of to some degree, because the only time you notice him is when he's sacking the quarterback, and the notion of the D-line where Calais Campbell, Matabike's been a guy that you mentioned, Pierce being gone, but they've really picked it up defensively here, and for Peters, who may have lost half a step, or Marlon Humphrey, who's been out there most of the time. Defensively, we should talk about some sort of identity, because we spent so much time talking about Lamar. The defense is going to be a big part of this. And when you see these crappy teams like Carolina come in, we mentioned McCaffrey, they don't have their best player anymore. They don't really have a quarterback anymore. Cam Newton's not around anymore. The defense should shine this week, right? Like this is a week where you look at it and say, man, my pitch shutout, maybe a three or a six, or maybe Carolina can count to 10 or 13 this week. But this is a period for the defense to step up and get the ball back and let Lamar and run this offense in the running way, where these games get over 340 and, you know, it's a three touchdown lead and it's nice and quiet and you're just giving the ball to Gus Edwards and you got 8 minute, 12 play drives in the fourth quarter. I go back to 2019, and as much as it's fun to throw it around and have the run and shoot offense, if you're going to play this style of football and do it well, there's a handbook for this. 2019 was the handbook, but part of the 2019 handbook was, oh, we're going to give them the ball. They're going to be off the field in three plays, if not five or six, and we're going to get the ball back. I think we're going to start to see that from the defense. We're going to talk more about this defense over the next month than we've talked about it in recent weeks, I think, especially given the three touchdown messes that they went through in September and blowing leads.
Yeah, I mean, as we should. I mean, we should be talking about this defense. A lot of resources have been pumped into this defense, including adding a second-team All-Pro inside linebacker at the trade deadline rather than a wide receiver, or, you know, whatever else you want to throw out there that they could have added.
And giving away picks to help the defense, right?
Yeah, I mean, the expectations should be very high. And let's face it, I mean, this defense, you still look at it statistically, it's still been middle of the pack for the most part. It's been Kind of average, when you look at it statistically to this point. But certainly the way they played against New Orleans, I think there's an expectation that that's going to become a little more of the standard, especially knowing you're going up against PJ Walker and Trevor Lawrence and 2022 Russell Wilson as opposed to 2012 through 21 Russell Wilson and Kenny Pickett and Jacoby Brissett or Deshaun Watson, whatever Cleveland's going to look like there. Atlanta with Marcus Mariota. I mean, not exactly going up against this isn't the gauntlet of all pro quarterbacks that they're going to be facing here over the next month and a half. So, yeah, I have high expectations for this defense. If this defense is going out there and giving up 24 points a game or 27 points a game against this lineup of offenses and quarterbacks, and yeah, I'm going to be asking questions. So, I think what you said, embarrassment of riches at certain spots. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'm with you. I don't know if it's quite to that level, but it's, they're looking much better. I mean, I think outside linebacker is the biggest example of this, and I wrote about this a little bit after the New Orleans game. I think back to week one and week two and week three. Adafe Owe and Justin Houston were playing a ton. Justin Houston played over 100 snaps over the first 2 weeks, which is way too many for him. For a 33-year-old, that's too many for a 28-year-old if you're trying to keep guys fresh and productive and efficient. So we know how light they were at outside linebacker, but now you look at it and you have Tyus Bowser back. You mentioned JPP. They have Justin Houston, who is playing like the Justin Houston we saw in Kansas City years ago. That was a four-time Pro Bowl pass rusher. You have Adafe Owe, who I'm still looking and expecting and waiting to see take another step. It's kind of been an underwhelming second year for him to this point. But now that he's not in a position where he's having to play 60 snaps a week, does that help him? You mentioned Ajabo. So, you have a position that was a very clear weakness, just in purely in terms of numbers at the beginning of the year, that now has a potential to be a strength and has a potential to be, one of their better position groups on either side of the football. And, we've seen it, the pass rush. How much have we talked about this pass rush for the better part of the last 5 years or so? This pass rush over the last 3 or 4 weeks, it's played at a much higher level, not just Justin Houston, but, across the board, just getting more pressure on quarterbacks and making things difficult.
Well, we
So,
spent a long time in the offseason discussing who's going to get after Joe Burrow, right?
yeah, we've
Literally.
talked about that for years. I mean, it's really been, even when Matt Judon was here, we were talking about the pass rush, right? Even when they acquired Yannick Ngakoue at the trade deadline 2 years ago, and that one didn't work out so well. We were talking about the pass rush. We were talking about the really from the time that Elvis Dumervil was let go and Terrell Suggs was at the very end of his career, we were talking about the pass rush. So, it's not a new topic, but they are in a much different place, numbers wise and potential wise, at outside linebacker on the edge than where they were certainly early in the season. So, and I mentioned corner. I mentioned they're a little bit lighter there. So, yeah, they're going to need that pass rush to be formidable because, Marcus Peters maybe hasn't been the Marcus Peters of 2 or 3 years ago. And that's not to say he won't be by year's end. He's coming back from an ACL, but you have him. I mean, Marlon Humphrey's played at a Pro Bowl level. He's played at a high level. I mean, he's been Marlon Humphrey. But who else do you have there if something happens, or if you're in a position where, Kyle Hamilton being the nickel isn't working out quite as well? So, you have a little less depth in the secondary, specifically at corner, but you're hoping that pass rush and being so formidable up front can help you there, right? I mean, that's the idea. So, it really is a case of I'm in agreement with you with the defense that you look at this lineup of teams that they're going to be facing, these offenses they're going to be facing in the coming weeks. In this day and age, it's tough to talk about a shutout, right? I mean, let's be clear, this is not going to be the 2000 Ravens defense. I think the Sunday night game is a perfect example of that. You see a linebacker kicked out of the game because, he hit a quarterback who was going down in the head, even though the quarterback was a runner. I still don't understand how that's an ejection because you're not talking about someone that's in a defenseless position per se, but that's the league. That's what we're talking about. So no one's going to be the 2000 Ravens anymore, but relative to their era, relative to expectations, relative to where they were earlier in the season, this is a defense that, yeah, I expect to be. This should be a top five caliber defense by the end of the year. If not, then I'd say they've probably underperformed relative to what you see on paper. So we'll see how it plays out, and they have to go out and do it. But it very much is a defense that I'm in agreement with you. You know, get off the field, give the ball back to your offense, run the ball. You know, I still want to see them pass and work. You know, you got to work on things in a big picture sense too. I mean, I don't think you go into a complete 2018 mode, for example, but yeah, they should be able to win these games and shorten games and impose their will, as we saw them do in the second half against Tampa Bay, in the second half against New Orleans. That should be something they should be able to continue to do moving forward. So it's, you know, they're in a good spot and they have to go out and do it. But I think there's a lot to really feel good about with this football team, and the defense is a big part of that right now.
He is Luke Jones. He is Baltimore Luke. He is monitoring all things Ravens. We got a chance to monitor the rest of the league. We'll do that again on Thursday night and pretty soon on Saturdays as we get into the holidays here. And next Thursday with Thanksgiving football that we're luckily not a part of this year. So we'll be watching along as the Carolinas and the Jacksonvilles and the Denvers line up here. And thinking that the Ravens could be 9-3 a couple weeks from now. And the conversation about home field advantage could be all part of that. You can follow Luke at Baltimore Luke out on Twitter and Luke at WNST.net. You can find me, Ness, at BaltimorePositive.com. Busy, busy week around here. I'm doing the aftermath of a lot of election stuff, having lots of local folks on. We got a great, great show on Friday. We're going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out at Pappas. I got some great guests. Dan Rodericks from the Baltimore Sun is going to be joining me, talking about his big stand-up show 2 weeks from now downtown. Also, probably about our fly fishing adventure on the Crab Cake Tour as well. David Steele will be here talking about his new book, and Mike Bordick and Frank Kolarik from Field of Dreams going to be joining us on Friday at Pappas from 2 until 5. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Window Nation. I'm sporting my Window Nation shirt, 866-90-NATION, keeping my place nice and warm here with the new windows, as well as our friends at Goodwill. We will be serving less fortunate folks for the holidays on Thanksgiving on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. That's next Wednesday, the 23rd. If you want to pitch in, you want to help out, you want to come down to the convention center, roll your sleeves up. My wife and I are doing that in the morning. Throw me a note, ness@baltimorepositive.com, or throw me a note out on Facebook or social media, and I will make sure that you get with the coordinators from our friends at Goodwill. Also, shout out to Wise Markets for providing turkeys next Wednesday for some less fortunate folks. So we are very, very appreciative that everybody's muscling up and pitching in here to make better things happen for the holidays. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.